Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at ChicagoReader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at ChicagoReader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
All righty then.
Your Ben Jarofsky show for Tuesday, May 25th is just moments away. But before we do this, we need to thank our sponsors. Sponsors like SEIU Healthcare, Illinois, Indiana.
All righty then.
The Chicago Federation of Labor are sponsors, as well as the Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for all things there is to know the city of Chicago, where to go, what to do, what to eat, what to drink, what pot to smoke, and political columns like Ben Jarofsky and Maya Duke-Masaba, the Chicago Reader, ChicagoReader.com. Subscribe. And if you would like to help out this program, you can become a Binhead. Find out more, ChicagoReader.com/Jarofsky, J-O-R-A-V as in victory, S-K-Y. You can either join the Alley, the Avenue, or the Boulevard. Go find out more information on that. But hey, the Ben Jarofsky Show starts now. It is Tuesday, May 25th, and live from my apartment in his attic, this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. Today on the program, Freddie Martinez, and it's the return of Vincent Norman. And now your host, Chicago Reader columnist Ben Jarofsky.
Hello, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this George Floyd Tuesday, and here's why. I think we all know why, but before we get to that, it's Tuesday, so I got to open like I always do. D, you have a good weekend, D?
Yes, I did. It was a good weekend.
I heard you went for a bike ride.
Yes,
that's what
I did.
My sources tell me.
Now that I'm living in Pilsen, I'm trying to go south. I went to Indiana, so it was cool.
Yeah. That's some serious bike riding. But when I thought about it, if you're starting from Pilsen as opposed to where you used to live in Rosanna Rodriguez Sanchez country on the 33rd Ward on the north side of Chicago, then going to Indiana is sort of like going to Promontory Point.
Yeah, it was so, like a 17-mile haul. I saw the Mascot Hall of Fame. That was kind of cool.
I did not even know there was a Mascot Hall
of Fame. I didn't either. I just saw it. I was like, whoa, big goofy-looking building.
Did you see anybody? Did you have any conversations with anybody about national health care, by the way?
Oh, did I ever?
Mayor Rahm, I biked all the way around Michigan. No one cares about health care. Thank you, Mayor Rahm. I watched a lot of basketball this weekend. It's my drug. I admit it. I take it to dull the pain of existence, which can be very, very painful indeed. Just so much war and hatred and poverty, to quote a song, and carnage in my beloved city of Chicago. People shooting each other all weekend. I sign up for ESPN and TNT, and I just sit there and I watch. Since we last talked, just run down a few. Memphis beat Warriors. Great game, Steph Curry. Bucks beat the Heat at the buzzer. Exercise those demons. Thank you very much, Chris Middleton. Hawks beat Knicks in the Garden. Spike Lee jumping up and down like he's on a pogo stick. That would be me if I had the money to get those kinds of seats. And if the Bulls were good enough to make the playoffs. And then there was D. Rose playing for the Knicks. He hit the shot with about 5 seconds left. That would have looked like it was going to send the game into overtime. Please come home, D. Rose. We love you. And then Trae Young hit the shot at the buzzer. And oh, well. So that went many, many others. Devin Booker, Ja Morant. I could go on and on, and I will later.
I wish you would have ran this sports content by me on the meeting.
Oh, our pre-show meeting?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, it's going to be worse when Vincent E. Norman's on. We're going to talk a little sports after we're done talking about George Floyd. Anyway, more sports talk to you. I just want to say one thing. My bowling team won our league championship last night. Yes. Our bowling team won the league championship. All right. Okay.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
What's the name of that team again? What's the name of that team again?
Trouble. So D, from now on, you're going to have to call me champ, as in we are the champions of the world.
That is never happening.
Yes, my bowling team won the Timberlanes Monday night bowling championship. We beat the Hawaiians to capture the title. Thank you, one and all. I want to give a shout out to my teammates, Norm and Cap and Timmy and Tony with a T. But also I had to give a shout out to Bob, the owner of Timberlanes, who was on the Hawaiians, the team we beat. I've talked about Bob before. He's a wizard of calculations. I've never seen a guy able to add up numbers so fast. It's like, bzz, 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 bzz. That's my imitation, D, of Bob adding up numbers. Anyway, we thought we had lost game one to a team called Cobra Kai. Yes, that's their name, Cobra Kai. And in fact, we had lost according to the score sheet. But Bob, doing a routine double check, discovered a 10-point error in our favor. And instead of losing by 7, we won by 3 or 4. I don't know. Something like that.
Great scorekeeping on the team of trouble.
I just want to say something for the record. I was not keeping score at the time, although our guest Freddie Martinez might check into my emails and see what secrets I have to say to some of my friends. Freddie's like, I'm going to look into that, Ben. Anyway, I just want to say thank you, Bob. And one more time, he was on the team that we beat to lose. So it's kind of like ironic. He helped us get to the championship game, and then we defeated his team. And when I thanked him for helping us advance to the championship game where we beat his team, Bob said, and I quote, anyone ever tell you you've got a face for podcasting? Touchy, touchy. Anyway, good times last night. I woke up to face reality. It's the 1-year anniversary of the murder of George Floyd. We'll be talking about that at greater length with Vincent E. Norman. To me, it's cut and dry. This is just my perspective. I actually thought it was premeditated murder. I mean, Derek Chauvin put his knee on Floyd's neck and just glared defiantly at the people who were begging him to take the knee off as George Floyd pleaded for his life. But obviously, not everybody sees things the same way. That brings me to Sunday's issue of the New York Times, where they did a special issue on George Floyd 1 year later. And one essay after another, mostly from the point of view that I articulated, folks like Rachel Hinton and Hakeem Jefferson and Jennifer Judy, A Moment, Not a Reckoning. Interesting articles, very provocative essays. Here's one. The history of Black rebellion shows that police violence precipitates community violence in a vicious cycle by Rachel Hinton. Elizabeth Hinton. I urge everybody to check out that essay. But the one that really caught my eye was headlined, What Do Trump Voters Think? It was a transcript of a focus group led by Frank Luntz, a longtime Republican strategist, and he assembled 14 conservative Trump supporters. This is a quote from the New York Times. I think that's kind of redundant. Conservative Trump supporters, but whatever. Anyway, just to make sure, this is the conservative Trump supporters as opposed to the liberal ones who, quote, reflected the Republican electorate. They're white, evenly divided by gender, more old than young, end of quote. And here's what they had to say about the murder of George Floyd. And I'm just reading these quotes, people. These two quotes do not in any way reflect the views or opinions of Ben Jarofsky. So Frank Luntz, who is the pollster, he's a Republican strategist and pollster. He asked the question, when I say George Floyd, what word or phrase comes to your mind? And Wanda, one of the Republican voters, says that's a tragedy. And Diana says painful. And Alex says addict. And Larry says murdered. And Josh says divisive. And Nancy says a sad situation. All right.
So then Lunt says, I listened to how you responded to my earlier questions about Donald Trump and to election fraud, and you were immediate. There was no pause. Yeah, I asked you about George Floyd. I know you all know who he is, and yet you were very, very slow to give me just a word or phrase to describe him. Why did you not give me a response immediately? Alex said, with Trump, even though he was president, he's much less of a controversial figure than George Floyd was. I read that, folks, on Sunday, and I'm like, wow, that is some statement. A man who got murdered for, at worst, passing off a counterfeit $20 bill, that's his crime, quote, is more controversial than the race-baiting president of the United States who stirred up an insurrection. I mean, I just read that, and I'm like, Trump is much less of a controversial figure than George Floyd. And then Martha said, I am a mother and a grandmother, and just the mention of George Floyd names recalls that video. It's one of those things, like, if you watch some of the videos of the death of Dana Pearl and other things like that, you can't unsee. And so you respond to it when you hear the name. And Larry said, if I had a couple sentences, it would have been a lot easier. He was a drug addict who was a criminal who resisted arrest and put himself in a position where what happened to him happened. If he didn't resist arrest, it wouldn't have happened. I think that pretty much sums up how divided our country is with that comment right there. Then later on, Frank Lund says, by a show of hands, how many of you think that George Floyd was in some ways responsible for what happened to him? And 13 of the 14 people raised their hands. I don't know what George Floyd could have done that he didn't do to prevent those cops from killing him. I don't know what George Floyd did that prevented the cops that day from even just stopping him. If you watch that whole, not just the part where Chauvin's got his, the infamous part that everybody knows, his knee in the neck. Go watch the whole opening where the cops come knocking on the door to get George Floyd. Drag him out of his car. For what? You write him a ticket. If you think he did something wrong, you write him a ticket. $20 counterfeit bill. Somehow or other, he contributed to his death. There's something seriously wrong with our country today that we're so divided on something we see right in front of us. Anyway, it goes on and on. I urge everybody, if you want to get a sense of how divided our country is, you might want to read this essay. Clearly, these are not views and opinions that you would hear on my show. And I like to think my show is pretty open-minded. You know, we're open. We have guests, but we do have limits. We usually only go to, we consider the right to be like Joe Biden Democrats. So maybe I should do a better job of getting out more and reaching out to Americans who don't view the world like I do, completely different. And, you know, I got to tell you, folks, this is on my mind on a related topic. This is on my mind because I'm reading these interviews with these Trump supporters, and they go on to deny that race played any role in this. And they say they don't see color. They're colorblind. I'm like, how? You know that's not true. And this has been on my mind because I've been dealing with the issue of anti-Semitism in this country lately, like particularly anti-Semitism on the left. You know, so many of my leftist friends will tell me, Ben, it's all about, we just oppose Israel. It's just anti-Zionism. It's not anti-Semitism. And I go, okay, I'll grant you that you are anti-Zionist and you oppose the policies of Israel and the bombing of Gaza. I understand all that. But please don't tell me that you've grown up in this country and have never heard an anti-Semitic comment. I mean, come on. I hear it pretty much every week, if not every day. I don't get out as much as I used to. And it's the same thing with anti-Black comments. People are like, I don't see race. Are you kidding me? It's the first thing any of us see. See, already I got issues. I don't see race, Ben. I'm just a colorblind kind of guy. Well, anyway, this is not the United States of America, apparently. It's the United Delusional State of America, We got a lot of work to do, ladies and gentlemen. And speaking of which, let's get down to business. We got a great show today. Freddie Martinez is on deck. Yes, that Freddie Martinez. We're talking about him all week. Maybe several times last week, Thomas Shuba was on the show. And for a while, there was a great debate. What do we call him? They go, one of our listeners, Deed, remember said, call him a hackivist. I'm like, I don't know if Freddie wants to be called a hackivist. So I think the first question I'm going to ask Freddie is, what are we supposed to call you? Hackivist? Troublemaker? Pain in the neck to Lori Lightfoot? He is the activist. I call him an activist who teamed up with his fellow computer geeks. Guy knows more about computers than anyone ever met. To help Chicago get introduced to some of Mayor Lori Lightfoot's emails. Yes, the hacked emails. We were talking about them all week last week. In my humble opinion, I put this in print. The man did a service to the city of Chicago. I don't know if everybody agrees with me on that one. Anyway, then Vincent E. Norman will join us from the Marijuana Hall of Fame, and we'll be talking George Floyd, Reefer, and, you know, I might get a few basketball questions in at the end. Vincent E. Norman's a huge basketball fan. So anyway, Freddie Martinez is on deck. We're going to bring him on. Freddie Martinez really helped me when I was putting together my column on the hacked emails. Tommy Shuba from the Sun-Times said, you got to talk to Freddie. Get him on your show. I do whatever Tommy Shuba tells me. So Freddie Martinez, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Before Freddie, of course, that was Michael Girardi, editorial board. We heard what you want to do. Now we'll tell you what's best for you. I'm not quite sure. Have the editorial boards of the two downtown dailies weighed in on the hacked emails yet, Freddie, one way or another?
I haven't heard. I haven't heard. And it's a shame, too, because they really do expose just how much the mayor's office goes to sort of mislead the public. And they should probably say something about that.
Yeah, they should. I will not bore you with a recitation of some of the really weird editorials I've seen down through the years regarding renegades in the press who don't follow the orders. So we'll just put that up aside for a conversation for another time. All right, Freddie, first question. I told you I was going to ask you this first. We discussed this last week. Are you an activist, a hacker, a hackivist? What do we call you?
I consider myself a technologist with a particular interest in transparency. So I like to say technologist with a transparency lens.
All right. You got that, listeners. Technologist. I'm going to write that down so I don't forget it. All right. A little bit of background before we get into the specifics of the hacked email, Freddie. How did you come to your mastery of computers and your passion for transparency and getting secrets out in the public?
Yeah. I mean, we've been doing this work for like 6 years now. But really, you know, I was kind of a bored software engineer in Chicago, living and working in Logan Square, but looking for different things to get involved with. And it really was the police department sort of blowing off one of our public records requests that kind of sparked a 6-year battle with the police department, different government agencies. And really, it was just this like one thing that we were interested in getting out there that they just refused to give us. And, you know, I don't know about you, Ben, but, you know, I can be just as petty and as, you know, closed-minded and go to the mats as much as these city officials want to. So that's really what started like 6 years ago.
What was that particular issue?
It was on some warrantless surveillance that the police department was doing. Since then, you know, the law's been changed and things like that, but it really did expose warrantless surveillance by the police department. So it was a good issue.
No, to the point you just made about tenacity and stubbornness and digging in your heels, I completely relate. I am not a technologist, nor do I pretend to be one. But on the other hand, I've mentioned this more than once. Most journalists are like this. If you're told what to write, you almost instinctively go in the opposite direction. Or more to the point, if they tell you what not to write, you want to write it. If they deny you access to information that you think the public should have, you see no compelling reason why they're denying it, then you want that information even more. And I think that's something that you're getting at that a lot of activists share. Is that correct, Freddie?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So let's talk about the hacked emails. Yeah. Take us from A to Z on these. How did you How did you become aware of them in the first place?
Sure. So I sit on the board of a group called the Distributed Denial of Secrets, which is another transparency organization. And, you know, we keep an eye out for leaked archives. We keep an eye out for materials that otherwise wouldn't see the light of day. And so we had heard that the city had turned over these emails to a law firm, Jones Day, and that through a third party, the third party had been hacked and sort of demanded a ransom from both the third party, Jones Day, and the city. And when they didn't get that ransom, they dumped the information on the dark web. So, you know, inquiring minds go looking for data. And we found it. We found it and sort of made an archive of the data. And that was about three months ago or so. And we had slowly been like looking through the data. And then because of other events that happened in Chicago, our timeline sort of greatly accelerated for release.
Now, you mentioned the dark web. I got a boomer question for you. So pretend you're talking to a bunch of boomers with this one. What is the dark web?
All right. So there's like, you know, things that you can Google that's fairly sort of straightforward. And then there's, you know, certain websites that you probably can't access unless you know, you know, these 52 character strings, dot onion, you know, sometimes the websites are up for days or even, you know, hours and they can rotate. So it's really like, you know, you have to look at like forums, you have to look at, you know, talk to other people, and then just sort of, you know, you never really know where you're going to find when you get there. And so there's a lot of like sort of behind the scenes, almost like meeting a guy behind the bar, trying to get information. And that's kind of like what it was, that sort of internet equivalent of that. Right. And so, you know, we had gotten some tips about where to look, and we look and we see that the data is sitting up there.
So you got tips in this case. Before we get into the getting of a tip, how much of your time do you spend just surfing through blindly looking for anything you might find that's hidden in the back rooms of the dark web?
Yeah, surfing the internet superhighway. You know, DDoS, Distributed Denial of Secrets, you know, that's kind of our mission. So hours and hours a week, you know, we have different people doing different things. But yeah, it's that's one of the main things that we do, plus like working with journalists and stuff. So it's a majority of our time with that group. And I, you know, as part of the board, we sort of advise them on, you know, what's in the public interest, what's not, things like that. So it's a significant amount of time, you know, like there's just so much data that's flowing out there, hacked, leaked. Otherwise, you know, you hear about a data breach every single day. So what's really important and interesting, those are really big questions to ask.
So have you ever stumbled upon something just routinely searching that kind of blew your mind?
I mean, besides these emails? Yeah. I mean, you know, there was a new data release this week about the Metropolitan Police Department here in D.C., about sort of its intelligence files and things like that. Another thing that we've published was the Parler archive, the archive that these people were using during the insurrection and uploading their crimes onto the internet. We archive that. So there's a lot of stuff out there, you know, that we're very fortunate that a lot of people come to us and give us the data. So we've kind of had this reputation as a clearinghouse now.
But I should just point out that Freddie just alluded to the fact that DC, yet he's born and raised in Chicago, proud graduate of Chicago Public Schools, but at the moment he's living in DC. So folks might be confused by that. But his heart will always be in Chicago. I just said that, Freddie. I don't even know if that's true. You may like, I can't, I will never go back to that hellhole of a place. What's your attitude about Chicago?
I love Chicago. I grew up in a little village. It's a great place, and my family's still there. I can't wait to come back and see what other kind of trouble we can get into. Good trouble.
It's good trouble. Yes, as John Lewis will say. All right. So you got a tip, and I know you're not going to reveal your source, which is good. So I'm not even going to ask you who your source was. But when you get a tip like this, like, How does it work? I mean, is it an email, a phone call, a letter? You know, they really go old school with you, send you a letter with a stamp on it. I mean, how do you get a tip about a trove, thousands and thousands and thousands of emails from Jones Day? That was the law firm that ultimately was the source of this information. How was that tip sent to you?
I mean, sometimes you read stuff in the news, you go looking for it. Other times, you know, emails, old school way. It's a mix, just like anything, like any kind of reporting. You sometimes get told, hey, this is interesting. Sometimes you go looking for stuff. And in this case, we had the data and we're looking through it, and just things tend to jump out. I don't know how it is for other people, but you read things that like sort of have this big red flag, like, yo, come read this, come check this out. And that was, if I'm remembering correctly, it was there was a police shooting data by sort of the risk manager office at the mayor's office. And so like immediately we knew that like you never see this kind of stuff based on like what we know from, you know, my years of chasing the police department all over the country, all over the city, that like these kinds of things you just never see. And that was like a big kind of red flag for us.
The one thing I don't understand, help me out here. You'll be speculating the way I am. We'll get into the city's reaction. They're not providing any information, but so just to help folks out, so Jones Day is one of the largest law firms in the country. It's got Democratic and Republican ties and connections, mostly Republican. It was Donald Trump's, I always have to point this out, election law firm. I think millions of dollars Donald Trump paid Jones Day to handle his election matters. So just think about that, ladies and gentlemen. And in a matter unrelated to Donald Trump, Lori Lightfoot asked a partner at Jones Day to investigate what the city, what she knew and when she knew it about the Anjanette Young raid, which I just I have to pause there, folks. Why do we even have to have an investigation by an outside entity of what the mayor knew? The mayor could just tell us what she knew. Anyway, sorry about that tangent, Freddie. But that in the course of that investigation into what the mayor knew and when did she know it, the city turned over thousands and thousands of emails, or hundreds and hundreds, lots of emails to Jones Day. And so when these other hackers who have nothing to do with Freddie got a hold of the Jones Day emails, this was a smaller subset. The city of Chicago was a smaller subset. And I don't think those other hackers really cared one way or another about what was those Chicago emails related to Anjanette Young and policing in the city of Chicago. So I struggle with this, Freddie. Like, why is it okay? Help me out here. For Jones Day, some law firm that represented Donald Trump, to get our secret emails, but it's not okay for Benny J here in the city of Chicago, or Freddie Martinez, or Dr. D, or any other resident of Chicago to see these emails. Help me out here, Freddie.
Yeah. So just for context, so there's like a 100 gigabyte file with all of this corporate data, all of this Jones Day data, you know, corporate acquisitions and mergers and all of these things that have nothing to do with the city of Chicago. And so what we took is we took like 95% of that out, and then we started looking through the documents, about 2 years of data from four key city officials, high level city hall officials. And that's really where the meat of it came from. And so we had, 70,000 documents or so, 60,000 documents. And it was really like reading through some of these things, police shooting stuff, police misconduct stuff, the mayor weighing in on COVID. And, I think one of the emails was, we need to shut down the lakefront because I drove from Hyde Park to Rogers Park. And, I hate it. So we have to shut down the lakefront for a year. We started reading stuff like that. And I'm like, okay, this is really interesting. This is fascinating stuff. And then the police murder of Adam Toledo happened. And based off of that, you know, we sort of accelerated our timeline and said, oh, okay, there's stuff in here that we think is interesting, but really, like, this is stuff that the public will never see, and it's really important to get it out. And so that's really how that release happened, right? So we had a bunch of information that we found on the dark web, filtered out the Chicago stuff, then saw this sort of, you know, we were picking through it a little bit, then we saw this really horrific murder, and we're like, okay, this really just needs to go out there. And so that was like the you know, that was the choice that we made. And why, you know, why is it okay for Jones Day to see the data and not, you know, Benny J? I think it's really, obviously it's about power. It's about corporate ties. You know, it's about non-disclosure agreements, right? And I think what I've tried to get across to the public about why this particular data release is so important is that this is data that you would never in 100 years see if the mayor had her way. You would never get it through a public records request. You would maybe get it, you know, in a civil lawsuit or whatever kind of lawsuit, under a protective order, right? So you could never release it. And that's it. Or someone would have to hack it and release it, which is what happened. And, you know, whoever did that, you know, like, God bless them and may God reward them. But, you know, that's the only way you would ever see it, right? Like, and so that's really why it's important to have people who have those skills that, like, can go and find that data, because we would never otherwise see them, you know?
Yeah. Well, I've often said, whenever I do these stories, that I have an obsession with stories, the struggle between journalists, community activists, ordinary citizens, and the city of Chicago to get basic information. I've been writing about this stuff Freddie forever. And usually I long ago quit. I just raised the white flag. I don't have the patience of a Freddie Martinez or Tommy Shuba or, you know, to go through and file FOIA requests. I'm just waiting for Freddie and Tom to do all the hard work. And then I write about them. Yeah, I admit it, Freddie, I'm lazy. All right, but be that as it may, the explanations and excuses that Chicago mayors down through the years and their aides and allies have given to concealing information for the public, Freddie, I've never seen it substantiated by what they're concealing. So in other words, well, these are very important documents that reveal very intimate discussions between advisors and the mayor. I'm like, when I finally get to read this stuff, this is basic boilerplate stuff that anybody would say over the air if they were trying to defend the mayor's positions. Do you follow what I'm saying? They may throw an F-bomb in there every now and then because, you know, that's what the mayor does. So they want to be like the mayor, but I've never seen anything that warrants even a redaction, Freddie, you know what I'm saying? And so one of the benefits of you getting access to these emails, number one, no redactions, right? But part of me, and I'll throw this to you, kind of curious, like, what do you think the city would redact if they had controlled the dissemination of these emails?
Yeah.
What do you think, Freddie?
All of it, like all of it, literally all of it. And so for the readers who may not know this, under the public records laws, there's this exemption that protects things like deliberative process, which is like supposed to be this kind of like back and forward that happens in decision making, so that you could say, like, should we close on the lakefront? Is that a public health emergency or not, right? And like, you should be allowed to have these kind of discussions in government without fear that, you know, the words would be taken out of context, or that, you know, you would only see one side of the story, and you know, you couldn't have, you know, frank discussions like that. So that's the idea anyway. But practically speaking, what happens is that the city officials abuse this ability and just sort of redact out everything, because what they're not doing is debating policy. What they're doing is PR spin and propaganda for the mayor. And so, you know, we have stories like what Tom Shuba revealed, that, you know, recommendations are just sitting on her desk for a year. You know, people are like literally being, you know, are literally dying of high, you know, CPD high speed chases, and the recommendations for what to do are sitting on her desk for almost a year, and nothing happens. But, you know, when we were to, if I were to ever ask for that policy or those discussions about those policies, I would never get it because they're not debating anything. They're just sort of sitting there. But they know that this kind of ability to redact anything and everything is so broad that they can just apply it in any way that they want. And so yeah, that's really why this stuff is so important, because you would never get it, like, ever. And really what they show is, like, what you described, Ben, is that, you know, they sound boring, because in a lot of ways it sounds very benign, because what they're doing isn't like policy making. It's sort of like, how do we, you know, describe this thing that makes the mayor look good. And so that's really like problematic for lots of different reasons.
Yeah. The point, the email that Freddie alluded to, I forget which publication. I want to give a shout out to whatever publication was the one that broke it. I just can't remember, but it was classic. It was this urgent, angry email written by Mayor Lori Lightfoot herself, describing a car ride she took. I believe it was from Hyde Park along Lakeshore Drive north to the Loop. And as it was a beautiful day. I've talked about this endlessly on this show, Freddie. That beautiful day last March, I think it was like the first nice day after winter. And Chicagoans, as they do when it gets nice after winter, ran outside. And the mayor was just outraged. You know, she was even angrier than Tony La Russa was at Mercedes when he swung at 3-0 and didn't obey his signal. It kind of some similarities. She was outraged that Chicagoans would defy her order, command to stay inside. And so she issued, you could see that all the discussion, Freddie, about whether or not we should close the lakefront, there was none. It was an angry email from Lori Lightfoot. That's discussion in the city of Chicago. Very illuminating email. Do you remember who it was that broke that story, by the way?
I don't even remember. I've seen so many. Like, you know, what's interesting is that the emails did have like so many stories broken. I saw a lot of people on Twitter just sort of picking apart different things that they thought was interesting. So it's been like, that's how you know you kind of hit gold, is when it's hard to keep up with all the stories. So that's been like really cool to see. And there's just been so many of them. Some of them, you know, really, really troubling. Some of them, you know, I guess, you know, you can't use the lakefront is maybe, it's not sort of the end of the world in many ways, but you know, it also, you know, there's a whole range, right? And again, the range of stories that you would just never hear ever if the mayor had her way. It's hard to describe that scale, both of like really serious stories where people are dying that the city refuses to do anything about, to like very much like hallway monitor, like, you know, stay at home because I told you to type stuff. So it's just been incredible to see.
Now, the mayor's response was to what? How do I summarize her response? Her response was to chide and chastise reporters for writing about the emails, to suggest without any evidence that there was some fabrication, that the emails weren't legit, that somehow or other maybe Freddie Martinez himself had typed them up. She didn't say that, but I mean, it's kind of like, well, who would make up these emails if they're not legit? And then the final step was no comment from anyone in the city of Chicago about anything that is taken from an email, because the emails were hacked or stolen property and is a criminal investigation. So we're just not going to comment on them. What's your response to the mayor's response to the emails?
I mean, you'll hear here first, Ben, that we did fake those emails, 60,000 of them. We faked them in my free time. No.
Joking, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, joking. You can't see the banter. It's banter. So look, first, obviously, we have a First Amendment right to publish on anything that's sort of obtained illegally, as long as we journalists don't engage in that criminality ourselves, which we didn't, right? So we have this very clear First Amendment right to be publishing. So that's important. The second part is that the mayor has this sort of Wizard of Oz moment of like, don't look behind the curtain, which just sort of fueled sort of the hunger to go look for these emails even more, which was not very good strategically on her part, I don't think. Just my opinion. And then third, though, and I think this one is really important, is that I think that the policy of not commenting is, it's just like bullshit, honestly. You know, we've seen, like I alluded to the story with Tom Shuba, where CPD is going on these high profile chases and killing bystanders. Like they're playing, you know, demo derby with their cars, crashing them like 2/3 of the time. And nothing happens, right? And so very serious kind of stuff, people dying. And her comment is, well, the emails were hacked and therefore we won't say anything. Like, that's fucking bullshit. Excuse my language to the youngsters listening, but it is bullshit. Yeah. I mean, it's bullshit. And the other thing I will say, though, and this was really like my challenge to the mayor, is that if you think that those documents are faked or that somehow they're one-sided, her office could just waive any kind of like interest it has in the other email chains, other discussions that they've had with other people that show a full side to the story. But they don't do that, right? Yeah. Because really what they're doing is, I would say, pretty indefensible. And the stories are not flattering. And I don't think any, you know, any other way they tell the story would be in their interest. So they just kind of default to this no comment, you know, bullshit. I'll say it again, but that's
what it again. It's swearing is permitted on a podcast, Freddie. But my favorite part was where you apologize for the youngsters who are out there.
The youngsters.
We don't want to contaminate their minds.
Yeah.
Our next guest, Vincent E. Norman, is on board. We're going to bring him on very soon. But Freddie, I'll close with this. Is there anything that you really want to alert citizens, listeners to, that's in the email that has not gotten the attention that you believe it should get?
I think there's a lot of stories in there that really didn't get the amount of attention that they should have. The Block Club Chicago did a really good story about how the city was allowing Hilco to restart destruction of a coal facility after they blanketed Little Village in this toxic dust, you know. And that one I think really stuck out to me because I don't think it got the amount of attention it deserved. You know, people just sort of, I grew up in Little Village, people just ignore, you know, Black and brown people because they're like, you know, pollution, go that way. The city hall just had this comment like, shouldn't we be talking to people in the neighborhood before we do this? And there's probably more things like that, right? Like these stories that of Black and brown Chicagoans who just get ignored. You know, the recycling plant, the Iron General stuff is also in there as well. And I think that's kind of like a thing that we should probably pay a lot more attention to. So that was one that I really stuck out to me, both as a Chicagoan, as someone from Little Village, but also just like, you know, thinking about like what kind of stories are not told.
Freddie, before we let you go, if folks want to get in contact with you, get more information about what you and your fellow technologists, activists do, I'm going to call you activist anyway. I like that better than technologist. Where do they go and how can they find you?
Yeah, I mean, info@lucyparsonslabs.com. That's our website. I will also, you know, shout this out real quick. Anyone who has information about Mayor Lori Lightfoot or City Hall and wants to message us on Signal, the number is 773-364-1717. 773-364-1717. They can reach us securely there and give us any kind of tips they want.
All right. Very good. Freddie Martinez, thanks for coming on the show. And I said it in print, I'll say it on the air. Thank you for revealing, doing what you did to reveal those emails. I always say more transparency, not less. And every mayor of the last 20 years has agreed with me while he or she is running for office and disagreed with me while he or she is running the city. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, thanks a lot, Freddie. I appreciate the work you guys do.
Thanks for having us, Ben. And again, you know, really do check these emails out. Appreciate it.
All right. That's great, Freddie Martinez. Vincent E. Norman is going to join us after we take this break.
Welcome back to the Ben Jarofsky Show, live from his attic.
I am live. I'm in my attic. It's really hot in this room right now. But D, I got the air conditioner turned off because I don't want the sound bothering people, but I am sweating like a horse. It's been 1 year since George Floyd's murder. And I just can't believe a full year has gone by. Man, just time flies. Vincent E. Norman, I booked him to be my guest to talk about the NBA and marijuana and just issues of the day. And he was the one to remind, I thought it was this weekend. I've almost lost track of time, Vincent. And just literally one day, Vincent, let's talk about, I'm going to read you some of these quotes from Trump voters that I started the show with and get your response to them. Just shows you that the world, not everybody agrees with you or me, Vincent, on these issues, but just general thoughts, Vincent. George Floyd, 1 year later. Go ahead. Vincent, you got your sound turned off. There you go.
Well, no, I was just saying that it's amazing that here we are a year into it and to be able to see some of the progress that has taken place and still talk about lack thereof with some people here in the country that still, you know, haven't woke up to the fact that we watched a young man be murdered in front of our eyes by a Minnesota police officer. An individual just could not seem to have respect for minorities, people of color, and just respect for life. And so knowing that he's been convicted of the crime unanimously, it's progress, but in some way, it's not, to say that it's not enough, but just in some way, it just doesn't really hold the accountability. Because, and I say that because look how many incidents happened after his death. Countless. Even as they were holding court, the young man, what, 8 blocks away, was murdered. Taser, taser. No taser. So, again, and that's why it just doesn't seem right. I mean, I want to, you know, again, send all the love and from the heavens above to the George Floyd family and other senseless violence by police officers to the families just throughout the years. So black and brown people, people of color, minorities. And in some instances, you know, the white race too, but we know that the disproportion is definitely black and brown people. And when you have officers, you put them in charge, you to serve and protect. That's what you look for, for them to serve and protect and not go out and just senselessly kill individual, unarmed individual black men and women for no apparent reason whatsoever. So it don't seem right.
You know, there's a counter attack coming. You know this from people who want to deny that the police ever do anything wrong. And part of the counter attack, it's a very complicated a series of arguments that they raise, Vincent. But one of the counterpoints is that it's people like you and me who are the racists, and that they are not racist. In fact, they're colorblind. They don't see color. And I can't, Vincent, I'm going to have a hard time articulating this. I don't know how you could grow up in America, and I've lived here my whole life, and say you don't see color. I think it's literally the first thing anybody processes is when they see anybody. I'm just speaking for myself. I don't want to put words in your mouth, Vincent E. Norman. But when you walk down a street, you know, like you're observing you, the race of the person over here, the race of the person over there, just strangers that you're passing on the street. You're absorbing information like this all the time. It's just so preposterous to me that people would just keep saying they feel like I don't see color. And then they'll quote the poor Martin Luther King. They'll take his quotes out of context to justify, you know, everything from killing George Floyd to doing away with affirmative action. You know what I mean? To putting right wingers on a bench. What's your reaction to people who say they don't see color, Vincent?
Delusional. Not in tune with reality. Want to not deal with the issue front and center, and not able to really, and last but not least, really grasp onto, you know, this country is built on nationalities of race, individuals in general. It's just what the world is all about. It's about multicolor people. Is it?
So I'll read you this one quote and get your response to it. We'll move on from George Floyd. This is from a New York Times article this Sunday. A panel was assembled of Trump supporters to get them to see how they view about the issues of the day. But one of the issues they talked about was George Floyd. I'm going to read you this exact quote from one of the participants in this discussion. His name is Larry, for what it's worth, doesn't matter. Quote, asking him to describe George Floyd. And he said, if I had a couple of sentences, it would have been a lot easier to talk about this. Floyd was a drug addict who was a criminal who resisted arrest and put himself in a position where what happened to him happened. If he didn't resist arrest, it wouldn't have happened. I have my response to that. What's your thoughts?
White power. White power. And white supremacists. And entitlement. That individual thinks he is entitled to make a comment like that. And it's okay to send it across the airwaves to other white men and women and to people of color in such a disrespectful way. It's white power. It is what it is. To bring up the fact of what his past was and the fact that not really understanding, this man never resisted arrest. He was clearly communicating with them, even when he was in the back of the squad car, that he was claustrophobic and he was having anxiety sitting in the back. Could they please take him out of the back of the car seat? He begged them, and they did. He said, you can keep the handcuffs on me. It's not the handcuffs. It's the claustrophobia inside this small box. Can you please take me out? I can't breathe. I'm having a very difficult time. So he communicated that, which the officers responded. And then what happened next, again, had nothing to do with him being a drug addict or resisting arrest, any of that. Again, I like to know, this individual, get in front of the camera on national news, ABC National News, CBS National News, and utter those same words in front of the American people, in the front of the world. I dare you. I dare you. And I wish somebody maybe had a clip that could put it out there, but do a press conference. Get in front of the world and say that. I guarantee you'll lose a lot of friends along the way. He'll keep a few.
Yeah.
A lot of close people will disassociate themselves with him. You really know that bit.
Yeah. This, by the way, just so folks know, I don't even know who the gentleman was that's made these comments. It's from an article, a transcript of a focus group that was conducted by a Republican strategist of Trump voters. And so this strategist, Luntz is his name, is very good. I have to give him credit. I don't see eye to eye with him politically, but he's very good at getting people to feel secure and safe, to open up and express how they feel. And now this group, there are no black people in the group. It's all white people and they're all Trump supporters. So they're really comfortable in their surrounding. But Vincent, I've been around people long enough to know you just give them a little alcohol and it frees them up and they say things. So I'm just astounded that the gentleman could say that and then go on up with his fellow Trump supporters to say, yeah, we're colorblind. We don't see color. You know, so we got a long way to go. Now, you said there's improvement and progress, and Vincent's backgrounds in sports, particularly basketball, has done a lot of work with Michael Jeffrey Jordan. We've talked about this in the past. And last year in the bubble, the players insisted and the owners went along with this. It was the height of all of the protests, Vincent. Black Lives Matter on the floor was painted on the floor, if you recall. It was on many jerseys. Everybody was being an activist, etc. In your humble opinion, does the fact that the NBA allowed these messages to go out indicate that the folks who run the NBA have had a change of heart and really open-minded about these issues? Or do you think it's just PR? What are your thoughts about this?
You know, I think that the NBA, they warmed up to the idea. They understand that, you know, 70-80% of their players are African-Americans, black and brown. And so they were sensitive. They have been in the past. Versus NFL, but that's a whole other story. Kaepernick. Anyway, so, you know, I think it was genuine. I think that they understood that there was going to be some resistance from some of their fans against the idea of, you know, having Black Lives Matter on the basketball court and so on and so forth. And I like to transition. You know, what I mean by that is that, you know, things is coming back to normal, but they continue to push the envelope of, you know, standing up for, you know, justice for all. And they continue to talk about the racial disparities, systematic racism. It still addresses that without putting it front and center on your TV screen, on the basketball court, or on a player's jersey. I don't think it's necessary now. Just continue to keep the awareness going and we all can grasp onto what is real and what is true and what's not. So I think they're doing a great job.
All right, Vincent, since you mentioned football, I just have to say, the last time we were on the show, I was trashing the hometown Chicago Bears. I was through. I was officially boycotting them. I said they're all prejudiced against black men who play quarterback and trading up to take Mitch Trubisky over Patrick Mahomes. I was through with them forever and ever. And then I did a flip flop on draft night when they traded up to take Justin Fields. And I pointed out he's a black man. So it's like they either learn from their mistake or they really take seriously the fact that I said I was through with them. And I doubt very much they even paying attention to me. So I reversed. I'm back in the Bears bandwagon because of Justin Fields. What's your position on Justin Fields and the Bears?
I think it's a great, signal to, you know, Chicago, especially black and brown people, you know, and we should not have to say that, but it has to be said because, you know, there's a lot of black fans out there, Chicago Bear fans. And when you see constantly how the organization is ran, and a lot of times critical thinking is based on that particular white person that they're thinking about you in such a disproportionate way of away from African Americans. You got to be like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Now, I say that because here we bring in, what's his name? The guy who won the Super Bowl for the Philadelphia Eagles.
I just blanked on his name. I thought you were going to say Andy Dalton, who's the Cincinnati.
But let's just start with Andy Dalton. So we bring in Andy Dalton after we bring in,
oh boy, from the, yeah. I can't believe I'm blanking on his name. That's how much I put, what's that?
His name is Fleury Foley.
Yeah.
Is it Nick Foles?
Yes, Nick Foles. I put it out of my mind because the Bears are so terrible.
So we bring in Nick Foles in that pandemic terribly, but they paid a lot of money for that salary. And then we bring in Andy Dalton after we finally realized that Mr. Trubisky has proven that he can throw the ball past the guard. He's been playing for 4 years almost. He hasn't proven it, but he's still playing. So we finally bring in Andy Dalton. I think that, you know, bringing in this guy from Ohio State is a good move. I hope that the top brass really be able to let the general manager and let the people in charge do a job, give them complete autonomy to bring this quarterback along the right way, as did, you know, Coach Reed, Andy, did.
With Mahomes, yeah.
And then, he's ready to put him in there. Now, I think he should start his second year, but I think he should definitely. This is something that I always question with NFL teams. You have a team playing. They get to week 9. They have a losing record. They started with that starting quarterback, and they continue to play that starting quarterback and don't give that rookie a chance to start develop to see real-time football. You know you're not going to the playoffs. So why not train, which that's what Andy Reid did. You know, he kind of put Patrick Mahomes in there, you know, gave him some plays and let him see how things work. That worked out well. Went to 2 Super Bowls back-to-back. He's 1-1. You know, could have been 2-0, but that's all another story too. But no, I just think they need to give him time to develop, work with him. And if the owners allow that to happen, we might have something special here.
Well,
you definitely played a role in it. Don't think for 1 minute that you was not heard or your audience did not echo those same words that why don't we have a black quarterback? Why are we not giving a black quarterback a chance?
Yeah.
Okay, you've done all this here, at Hallis Hall. Let's make a decision. So I think here we are.
Yeah. Well, I welcomed it back in a bandwagon. It wasn't that hard to get back in a bandwagon because as much as I was moaning and groaning about him, I'm a lifelong Chicago Bears fan. I cannot help myself. I can't really root for any other team in football but the Bears. And and I say this, they were utterly pathetic. At quarterback, Jim McMahon came out and said it, and I agree with him. Jim McMahon, former quarterback, he just said, "This is a place where quarterbacks go to die," and it's like, yeah, they're just terrible with quarterbacks. So I just had so much hope about Justin Fields, and it's enough to get me back on the bandwagon. I'll tell you one thing: I am on the bandwagon on, and that is the NBA right now. And I'd love to get your thoughts about this great playoff we're going to do a special show on this one coming up. I'm an old timer. I've been watching basketball since the 60s, but I resist the temptation that a lot of old timers have to say that it was always better in their day. Vincent, I believe we're in these are the golden days of this basketball right now that we're seeing on a regular basis. With, I mean, I just think of these young Ja Morant, Trae Young, Luka Doncic. I mean, every series, there's this great young player that's showing me stuff. I'm just thrilled by it. It's the one thing that's keeping me going in the face as I started the show. Just all the sad news, the violent news, the horrific news in our country, the violence in the city of Chicago.
Speaking of news, and for, and I want to get into that NBA, I do have some you know, Marijuana Hall of Fame.
Well, we were going to close with that, but go ahead. Since you scooped me, go ahead. Well, the big news is that you're going to put me in the Marijuana Hall of Fame. Is that the big news?
Well,
I'm always bugging it.
So, you know, things are going quite well. You know, New York made an announcement about recreation. And I mean, that's not as old news. But in Detroit over the weekend, I was really pleased to see a black and brown company, Michigan Agriculture Services, have a completely integrated cultivating facility that's in development. $6 million they raised to do that. And so that was really good to see. Again, that movement and other movements of minorities in Michigan versus here in our home state of Illinois. So Illinois, we need to step up. JB, we need to get that bill signed. We need to get a lot of things done. So that was good to see. And then also we had launched, you know, with the plastic and, you know, the ban of plastic straws here in Chicago and other cities, other states, I should say. We launched hemp tinsels. We have made out of hemp silverware and also out of straws. And so that company has really been taking off in Long Beach. It's something that Tim Hall is involved in as well. We want to save our planet, right? I'm sure your fans and your audience understands that biodegradable products are much better than those who are killing our planet and the sea life and stuff like that, plastic, et cetera. So that was pretty much it. Now let's get into that basketball.
All right, we'll close with the basketball as opposed to marijuana. Do you share my conviction that this is a special moment?
I think that you're exactly right. You know, I can't. Now, I haven't really watched the season, right? But this playoffs, like tonight, I'm ready. I cannot, you know, take my eyes off going from TNT to ESPN or just, you know, TNT, ABC, because it has been exciting. And to see the young talent, it reminds me back when Mike, back in his day, we had, you know, Michael Jordan, you had Isaiah Thomas, Charles Barkley comes along, you had Larry Bird still there, Magic still there, and you had all this excitement that any given night you will see a superstar, a future Hall of Famer on the court. And you mentioned Morant. I mean, the way he's playing, you know, I think you and I would agree, he will definitely be a future Hall of Famer. He's playing that well. And like I said, Nuke Dolich, you know, I mean, the players, they're young. They're like 22, 23, 24. And they're playing like, we should say grown men, but they're playing like NBA superstars. They're holding their own. And it's exciting. I mean, I'm excited.
No, when Trae Young hit that shot that beat the Knicks, first of all, I can't stand the Knicks, but to beat the Knicks, just after D. Rose hit the driving layup, and then boom, Trae Young, this 22-year-old with the quick crossover, slips right around his man and then a perfect floater. I'm like, how did this kid learn to do this?
An added insult to the wound as he was going through the tunnel saying, it's awfully quiet in there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the guards are going to be loud when he come back. Now, he doesn't say, I don't know. Like, but, you know, that's pretty bold.
Yeah, that game's tomorrow. That's the one where everybody was chanting in Madison Square Garden, F-U Young, and they weren't saying F. And he just scored 30-something points, including the game winner, and then he was, like, putting his hand behind his ear. I can't hear you. And everybody shut. Even Spike Lee didn't have anything to say. All right, we're going to close by getting your predictions, and then I'm going to hold you to them tomorrow morning. I'm going to read them about tomorrow afternoon, I should say. So tonight's three games. Let's see if Vincent E. Norman knows what he's talking about when it comes to predicting. Brooklyn Nets versus Celtics. Who do you got?
Brooklyn Nets versus the Celtics. In Brooklyn, the Nets.
Okay. All right. Me too. All right. Lakers versus Suns. This is game two in Phoenix. Phoenix won the first game. Devin Booker was unbelievable. And Chris Paul hurt his shoulder, but he came back. So who do you have in this game?
Now, I'm going to say this. I would say the Lakers if the Suns did not have a general leading the army. And that's Chris Paul. Chris Pauls, understand that one thing you have to do against any opponent is defend your court. Phoenix tonight.
All right. He's going with Phoenix. I'm going to go with the Lakers. I think AD, Anthony Davis, is going to show up for this game. He was missing in action on Sunday. So I'm going with the Lakers. And we'll close Mavericks Clippers. Man, the Clippers, what a bunch of head cases. They lost game one in their home court. Luka Doncic, which just came in, it was just controlled that game. And so it's pretty much do or die for the Clippers tonight. Your prediction, Vincent E. Normant.
I'm going to, I picked the Clippers to get in the Western Conference Finals, but it didn't happen. I'm going to say that, old Ty Lue and his job is on the line. Really, he's going to convince these guys to play together tonight and they'll come out with a win. Now, will they win the series? I don't know about that one, but they'll come out with a win tonight.
I'm with you 100% on that one. The Clippers will win. There's no way they're going to go down two games love to Mavericks going back to Dallas. If they do, they're in big trouble getting swept. All right, Vincent E. Normant, I want to thank you for taking the time to come talk to us. And we'll probably bring you on for that NBA show a little down the road, all right?
Let's do it. All right. Thank you, Vince.
That's great, Vincent E. Normant. He says, if I'm nice enough to him, he'll put me in that Hall of Fame. I'm looking forward to that. I also want to thank Freddie Martinez. It was great talking to him about the hacking of the emails. And, of course, the man, the myth, the legend. I want to thank him. Yes, the pride and joy of Alton, Illinois. And as Vincent E. Normant and Freddie Martinez and Luka Doncic and Ja Morant and Trae Young will tell you, back home at Alton, they call him Dr. D. Give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. See you tomorrow, everybody.
And don't forget, you can download previous Ben Jarofsky shows, Benny J bonus interviews, and so much more. ChicagoReader.com/Jarofsky or wherever else you download podcasts. You can always send us an email, BennyJShow@gmail.com. Find us online at Benny J Show, BENNY, the letter J Show. And you can call this program. It's true. We have a phone number, 708-658-4788. That number again is 708-658-4788. Woo-hoo!